Session number 21647, Mule 2.
But Alexander Real 2. You were saying this German warship is called
from a World War One, yeah. The Derflinger, I don't know how you pronounce it, how you spell it, Derflinger.
And can you tell me where exactly the workshops were?
Right along the bottom of the ship, turned right over. Well, the bottom was about 30 or 40 foot wide, and the Navy had built corrugated iron workshops on them. So to carry out jobs, you know, for repairs for different ships.
You mean they'd use the hull of the
That's
ship
right, yeah, yeah.
as a platform?
That's it, yeah. And they built workshops, like corrugated iron workshops on the bottom of it. And you'd see the flashes from the oxyacetylene cutters and welders as they were doing the work. And then you'd hear, and then there was a firm still salvaging parts from the German Grand Fleet when they scuppered themselves in Scapa Flow. There was still a firm going. He had about four divers working for him. They'd go down, they'd take out the phosphor bronze and brass parts. You know, that's what's for trading scrap. I think he still does it now. He did it then. He did it right from not long after the First World War in his company. And they'd go down and they'd blast a piece out of it, phosphor bronze or brass or gunmetal, anything the precious metals. And of course, the Royal Oak's out there with the 400 bodies in it. I think it's a war cemetery now, I think.
Was Musketeer a happy ship for you?
Yes. Every ship I was on was a happy ship. And after that, I went on the Enterprise, which was a bigger ship. And funny enough, we were in March 44, we were shelling Slapton Sands, you know, where the Yanks lost all those men. Well, in March, we were shelling Slapton Sands because they'd built pillboxes to German specifications that they must have got back from Europe. And we were using, I don't know whether they were special shells or what, they didn't tell you much, but we were bombarding these things on Slapton Sands. And later on, of course, the Yanks lost all those men going to Slapton Sands and back. That was another story. Pompey Harbour was full of ships. It was March 44, something like that. Or April, March or April 44. And they were doing this exercise of landing craft, tank landing craft and everything. And the Navy wanted to, this is what I've heard of our signalman on the Enterprise, the Navy wanted to give them a big escort and they turned it down because Eisenhower had come to watch it and they wanted it to be 100% American action. They didn't want any Royal Navy ships in it. They weren't like that. So we had one dilapidated corvette. That's all they'd allow. So they got hammered, didn't they? Lost about 700 or 800 men. The E-boats got amongst them and sunk them. You probably know about it. I don't know what happened to the bodies. They said they buried them down south, but they proved they didn't. So anyway, the admiral who was in charge of that operation for the Yanks committed suicide in Italy a year later. I think they were going to court-martial him. But it was his fault. You know, they try to blame it on the British, but our signalman, he'd read the signals going flashing about, and they'd turned down any escort of British ships. Pompey Harbour and round there was full of ships, waiting for D-Day.
Where were you at the time?
On the Enterprise. We were in Pompey Harbour. Yeah.
At the time of the Slapton Sands incident?
Yeah.
What exactly did you see yourself?
Oh, I didn't see any of it. It's a good way away, Slapton Sands. But when I was there, we were just shelling the coast where these pillboxes were. This is before they tried this action out. I wouldn't be surprised if they said there were some Yanks in the bloody pillboxes, you know what I mean? And, yeah, that was terrible, that, because the Yanks didn't want us involved because Eisenhower was coming to watch it. It was dropped a right big clangor. E-boats saw them off. Terrible. Then what would we do? What would we do then? Then we set off for D-Day, is that all right?
Please, yeah.
I think we got there about 5 o'clock in the morning. Man, it was, you've never seen as many ships. There was about 30 British destroyers, maybe more, and about 10 or 15 Yanks, and the Yanks had the Texas, the Tuscaloosa battleships, these were, and the Nevada, I think they were. Nevada, Texas and Tuscaloosa. We had the Ramillies, the Rodney and the Warspite of the capital ships, The cruisers, it was... Oh, does it matter?
Don't worry about the list of the ships, because that's on record, isn't it?
Yeah, there was loads of destroyers. The Opportune, the Saumarez was there that got hit with the... by the Charnos. There was our ship, the Enterprise, and there's only two ships of that kind, of that class. There was the Enterprise and the Emerald that was there. So many ships. You've never seen as many ships there. Anyway, so we did our bit. We were shelling the beaches, and we had we took on board the American war correspondent, a bloke called Desmond Tyre, the New York Evening Post. And they transferred us to support the Yanks on Omaha Beachhead. Now, it was him who told us they'd landed a mile from where they should have landed. Can you imagine picking a beach out where you have to climb up a cliff face? Who would do that? They landed a mile from where they should have done. You know, the proper beach, where they'd have got ashore all right. So we came in so close, the keel was nearly touching the bottom, you know, to shelling the Jerry's. And it was him who told us they'd landed a mile from where they should have landed. You can tell we wore the guns out. We had to dash back to Portsmouth, and they had 6-inch guns ready waiting to lift into the turrets. I think we did it in the dry dock where the old Nelson is now, the Victory. I got a picture of us in the dry dock there. One of them took a picture of it, and we went back again. And we used to pull his leg and say, listen, we're going to have to start dropping some of these shells behind you fellas out there and make them get going. But it was rough for them, but it was their fault. But we'd sent a minesweeper to sweep the channel that they're going. But a Yankee bomber sunk it. You know, oh, we were mad about that. If it had come round again, we'd have all opened up on it, no matter what its markings were. We picked up about 10, I can't remember the name of it. We picked up about 10 survivors.
What condition were they in?
Well, shocked and some wounded, and I don't know how many his crew was. I don't know what the name. I can't remember the name of the ship that it was. It was a minesweeper, anyway. All right, and then what? Then, when that was over, into Portsmouth, and they sent me to Whale Island.
What had been your duties in Enterprise?
I was an AA gunner, number one on the Orlican, on the twin Orlican. So they sent us to Whale Island for extra training, and the Marine barracks at Eastney, the Navy took it over because we were going out the Far East, they knew that. And they're giving us a refresher course on, I did anything up to, we did everything up to a 3-pounder at the AA. I was an AA 3. That was Orlicans. We trained on the old pom poms that they'd done away with, but we still trained on, we replaced them with Bofors. We did the Bofors gun. That was Eastney Barracks. The sea out there must be full of shells. It was 4-inch as well, but that wasn't us, not the air gunners. And so I can always remember the big dome they had there. And they strapped you in your Orlican in a big dome, you know. And then it'd light up and a plane would come over. It'd be a Jap Zero. And there'd be somebody shouting in your ear, he's not going to turn away, you know, he's going to come straight at you. It's a kamikaze, you've got to get him, you know, and things like that. And I loved it. And real life, you know, like full-size picture of a Zero coming in and things like that, and this officer, whoever he was, screaming in the headphones, you know, he's coming in, he's not going to turn away, you've got to get him. So that was a refresher course, and right, so off we went to the Far East. We picked up a convoy, and we went into Bombay, and I can always remember it. We picked up a regiment of Gurkhas, well, one of the ships did, and they were playing the music as they marched on the ship, and it was Aurora, da 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 da, Aurora, a popular tune of the day, at double time, you know, beaming faces, you know, they were. Anyway, we set off, we had about 500 Marine Commando on board us, landing craft, and we set sail, we're sailing stooging around the Indian Ocean, and we began to think, oh, why aren't we? We're going to land behind Japanese lines. We're going to have an invasion below the Japanese lines in Burma.
Which ship were you in?
The Enterprise. Cruiser, the Enterprise. So we thought, well, what's the delay? Why are we stooging about here? They had boxing matches. I won the middleweight. On the Enterprise, I won the middleweight title. I beat a kook. I beat two Marine commandos and a kook in the final to break up the monotony. You know, that's all it was for, to, because people were saying, what's happening? You know, and the Marines had their knives out and sharpening them, and what are we going to do anyway? Then the word came through that they'd dropped the atomic bomb. So they didn't need us then. So we discharged all the troops back at Ceylon. And then, well, I can't say how long it was, we went to Singapore and we picked up some ex-prisoners of war. And we took them to Trincomalee and Colombo, as they were then in Ceylon. They changed its name now, but it's not Ceylon anymore. And left them there, you know, some of them wanted building up, you know, but some we brought home. You know, there was some of them there, they'd never seen their kids. They had kids 3 and 4 years old, they'd never seen them. And there was one bloke, he was a Marine, he must have been about 40. And he'd been a prisoner of war from Singapore in 41, you know, so he'd been a prisoner of war over 4 years. He had a heart attack in the Suez Canal and we buried him at Aden, I think. As I got a picture of his grave, we took a picture of it. I was one of the burial party. And buried him there. And we came back and the ship paid off. Because it was an old ship anyway. Paid off. So we were sent to barracks. Well, I was a gunnery rate, so you went right in the guard, which I hated. Marching up and down, you were in the barrack guard, you know, in Portsmouth, the big barracks.
Why did you hate it so much?
Well, all the bullshit, all the routine, you know, and you had to be polished and everything, that would be dead spick and span, you know, and you're marching up and down the gate and things like that. And so I went to the drafting office. I was in there a week. I said, listen, get me out of here. So I said, get me a ship anywhere. I don't care about it. So I did. They got me a ship. I went to Portland, Bill, where the Home Fleet's base was then, because the war had finished. They moved everything to Portland. That's where the pre-war naval base was Portland. But when the war, they've always moved it to Scapa Flow. It was easier to defend. So off we went to Portland for a corvette, HMS Tintagel Castle. Boy, did it roll about. It was 850 tonnes. And our job was to seek out mines that had broken away from the moorings. So I'd be sailing about up the English Channel, round the Irish Sea, looking for mines. And whenever they spotted one, it was clear lower deck. They issued the rifles and Lewis guns. The Navy always used Lewis guns, the old Lewis gun. Very, very, very reliable weapon. You know, you could just rotate the magazine and be off again. And we never exploded one. We sunk them all by gunfire, you know, with bullets. You know the prongs on them? Not one of them blew up. Not one. And we must have sunk about 20. But that was a bit of a nerve-wracking job, especially at night. Yeah, you couldn't. We had a big searchlight, but you couldn't see the mines, really. It was bad enough during the day. So that was a bit nerve-wracking at night, searching for these mines, British and German, that had broken away from the... From perhaps we were on the seabed and they'd rusted and broken away, you know. What a job. That was me. That's anyway, when...
So why were you doing it at night if it was so dangerous?
Well, we weren't doing it, but we were at sea. We didn't come in. We were at sea, you know, we had lookouts, just the same. I say, when I think back, it was a bit dodgy, wasn't it? Yeah. So then I was getting near demob time then, so I came off the Tintagel Castle. But it was rough out the Irish Sea, up the North the Atlantic, or the other side of Ireland. It's up and down. Oh, you know, it's anything like it, but I always had two dinners. Whatever ship was on, it never affected. I had that kind of stomach. You can't develop it. You're either seasick or you're not. And I used to pick the meat out of the lads' dinners that they couldn't finish, you know. It didn't bother me. I was lucky that way. So when they took me, I was waiting for demob. I was in Victoria Barracks in Southsea. Now, the wall's still there, right the way around. It had been since. And the gate's there, where you marched in, and the little side gate. You close the big gate at night. But they built flats inside it. And my job there, I had a cracking job. White hat, white belt, white gaiters. And I was outside Victoria Barracks directing the traffic coming from Gosport. It's a blind corner. And it's been anything coming out of the barracks. This is a blind corner, so I just stopped them. Or stop the traffic from Gosport. Usually the ones out in the barracks wouldn't stop. If you're that, you know, and you'd have to say, whoa, whoa. But it was, and all the tourists used to come and stare at you, you know, you're dead smart, you know, bayonet, whoa, lovely. That was the best job I had in the Navy. And then I was demobbed from there. Oh, we used to guard the demob clothes. We had a warehouse full of demob suits and things like that.
What were they like?
Well, my suit wasn't bad, but I remember I got on the train in London and I said cheerio to the two London lads. You know, I said, I don't know when I'll see you again. And as the train, well, I got this drill and I flirted it right across the platform. You know, I don't know where it went. But the suit wasn't bad. It wasn't a bad suit at all. Only got, what did I get? I got 56 or 58 pounds. What did they call it?
A gratuity?
Gratuity, that's the word, the gratuity. I got about 56 or 58, I forget how much. The blokes who'd been from the start of the war got about 75 or 80 quid.
What did you do with the odd gratuity?
Pardon?
What did you do with the odd gratuity?
Well, I fritted it away, didn't I? I was a young bloke, you know, I liked me pints, I liked the birds. So it went, I suppose 56 quid in 1946 wasn't bad. I was demobbed before I was 21, you can tell.
When you did your basic training in the Navy, what was that like?
Well, as I say, from start to finish, when I first joined and I went to HMS Raleigh and we fell in the first day, the PO who was training us, a petty officer, I remembered his name, right, boozer he was, he said, who's Alexander? I said, me chief, call him chief. He said, well, you've got 3 days to make your mind up whether you like it or not. I said, how do you mean? He said, well, you're a volunteer and you're only 17, you've got 3 days, and if you don't like it, we'll give you a railway pass to go back home. I said, you can forget that, I'm going to like it. I liked it from day one. You know, I wanted to get in, I just liked it from day one.
Well, what was so good about it?
I don't know. Perhaps the camaraderie with the blokes, you know, the lads, we're all lads together, and it was just great, you know, just... I say I was only 17, it was a big adventure for me.
But how did you take to naval discipline?
It didn't bother me, no. Didn't bother me, no. I never got in any trouble when I was in the Navy. Do as you're told and you'll be okay. Mind you, there was very few of the lads got in any trouble. I can only remember one getting court-martialed, and that's because he went down in the wardroom and started boozing, drinking the booze out of the wardroom. And they caught him, you know, and he got court-martialed, you know, and he went to the Coke Dyke, I think, in Glasgow, the naval detention barracks. I think it was called Coke Dyke, near Glasgow somewhere. He's the only one I can... And he had the DSM. And I remember when they court-martialed him, we all fell out on the quarter deck, and he shouted his name out. I forget his name, Able Seaman so-and-so, and he shouted, DCM. But they didn't say it, but he did. Each time he shouted his name out to be court-martialed, Able Seaman John Smith, he'd shout, DCM. So... He's the only one I know getting any trouble. And I never saw a coloured bloke on any of the ships I was on. Not one. I saw one in Victoria Barracks, and that was Randolph Turpin, who became the world middleweight boxing champion afterwards. And he had two plugs of cotton wool in his ears. He was an officer's steward. He was serving the officers in Victoria Barracks. But I never saw one coloured bloke. So when they say they fought the war for us, I say, I never saw one coloured bloke on any of the ships. Now, in the American Navy, they never allowed coloureds on the ship. They never allowed them on.
What was the idea of his having...
Oh, he had bad ears, he had perforated ears or something. Yeah, that's all we're getting. Because I was outside the gate one night, and he comes shuffling along, you know, hands in his pockets, shuffling along. So I said, straighten up there, you know, I didn't know who he was then. So this bloke looked at me, Turpin, and he did, and walked in, and the officer said, do you know that one? I said, I don't care who he was. He said, Randolph Turpin. At that time, he was the amateur middleweight. He had big, you know, the boxing books have his picture on the front, the best prospect Britain's had for ages. He was the amateur middleweight champion, which he went on to win the world title. But he was the only coloured bloke I saw in the Navy. What else? We lost our dog. I was on the Tadgill Castle and we sailed into Londonderry, going out of Londonderry. We had a dog, Torps, torpedo, I mean it's called Torps, you know. And this leading seaman is from Liverpool. He looked after it all the time. And the petty officer was from Bristol. Now, sailors from Bristol thought they were the bee's knees, that all the Navy comes from Bristol. You know, Bristol was the place. So they were always arguing, these two. This lad was from Liverpool. They're both Irish. Both Irish names. And so anyway, we went ashore in Londonderry. And we'd go over the border into Southern Ireland. Just take your hat off. Stick it under your mat. And they let you in, get a taxi. I forget the name of the village. We sailed in past Montgomery, where Montgomery's mother lived. A place called Moville. On where you sail into London. A lovely, lovely view sailing in there. And his mother, where she came from, Moville, on the right-hand side. We used to go to this village, well, a little town, really, for a drink, you know. Anyway, this night we were there, and these two started arguing. They'd had a few pints of porter. They started arguing. We knew it never came to blows, but some of the residents, since they sent for the Garda, they came in and started hitting anything where they saw a navy with a bloody truncheon. So I got under the table with my pint, you know, and there was a lot of scuffling and that going anyway. When we surfaced, they'd arrested some of them. And this lad from Liverpool got hit with a truncheon and split his head open. Well, you can tell they had to ship him to the hospital in Londonderry. But they arrested three or four of them. Well, you laugh. All the pub emptied, and the pub opposite emptied, and they all marched down the street to the police station. Let the boyos go! And I was there with them. Let the boyos go! With my coat up here fastened so they couldn't see me blue coat. Let the boyos go! There must have been about 200 people outside the police station. Anyway, they let them go, there was about four of them. They hadn't caused any trouble. It was them charging in that caused the trouble, these two arguing, but they never fell out. They both had Irish names, old Flanagan or something, you know what I mean? And, you know, that was when we came back and the dog went missing, because this Liverpool lad looked after it. When we left, leaving port, you all fall in. The dog would jump up on the captain, sit there like that, and he'd say, "You attention, tops, stop to sit there like that, this dog."
Put his paws up
on the big captain, sit there like that, and he'd be, "Tops, fall in." Knew every word he said. Anyway, it never came back, and he was in hospital. He was lost. He had his tag on, HMS Tintagel Castle. Anyway, I don't know how many months later it was, but when I was in Victoria Barracks, or a month or two, and outside the gate, this dog comes along, and there's one thing it always did with the dogs. It'd run at them and turn round in midair and hit them in the face with its backside. I thought, Tops used to do that. So Tops, well, it came running over, you know, fussing me, so I took it into the officer. I said, "Listen, this is a dog of Tintagel Castle. Come in, keep it, and I'll send a telex or something to Portland, see if the Tintagel Castle is there." So I tied it up with my lanyard. "Yeah," he said, "you see to it," he said. So I tied it to my bed with the lanyard, you know, and sent the telex. And this leading seaman came up for it and collected Tops. But carrying on with the story, years later, when I'd left my apprenticeship, I worked for a few months at a transport firm. In those days, the vehicle and the trailer were separate braking systems. They weren't like now, when a bloke puts his foot in the air brake to stop it. You had a big handbrake in the passenger side, which cables put the brakes on in the trailer in an emergency. So I went back there, driving heavy goods. And it was on Salford Docks one day. I was picking up a load of steel, I think. Anyway, I was waiting outside the cafe. They have a cafe, you know. And this bloke came and said, "Would you mind moving up a bit?" So I want to deliver this brewing equipment. You know, the big chrome brewing, big kettles and all that. We're delivering one to the canteen. So I pulled up a bit and I got out. I said, "Do you want to lift for it, mate?" Yeah, he said, "I wouldn't mind." As he turned his head, I saw this scar. So I looked at it. I said, "Tintagel Castle." And it was him, it was this leading seaman. He married a girl from Oldham. And he went working for a firm in Oldham. And it was him. This was years later. When he turned his head, I saw the scar in his hair. I said, "Your face is familiar. Tintagel Castle." And it was him. I said, "What happened to the dog?" Well, so I took him home with me when I was demobbed. And he said, "He died about a year ago." He said, "I came home one day and I couldn't open the front door and he was dead behind the door." And he was getting on a bit then, he said. Yeah, it's funny how things turn out.
But you were taking charge of him in the barracks, you say?
Yeah, I kept him only for a night. He arrived the next day to pick him up. He came from Portland to Tintagel Castle to take him back. Take him back to the ship, because he was the ship's dog. So he got leave to do it and everything.
And so...
This was after the war, you know, when he took the dog home with him when he came out of the Navy. They said, "Well, you better take him with you, because it's only him. he did everything. He said, you know, he knew him, he was a companion, so he said he let me take him home with him.
So in Londonderry Lough, he jumped overboard?
Oh, no, he went ashore with the seamen, but he never came back. He never came back. When he went to hospital, he never came back. He was in the infirmary in Londonderry. You know, because he got this right crack on his skull, which they didn't need to do, really. And the dog never came back. So he must have come back on some other ship to get back to Portsmouth. Somebody else must have picked him up and brought him back. But I knew him. As soon as he ran at these, there was about three dogs. He ran at them and swung around in midair and hit them in his backside. And that Tops always did. The only dog I've ever seen do that. I thought, that must be Tops. When I shouted him, he came running over. Yeah.
And so, just going back to the evacuation you had to Knutsford, I understand that you were only there a very short time?
Oh, I think I stayed 2 weeks. I don't know whether it was me who asked to come home or they asked my mother to take me home. I don't know. I would rather, I'm inclined to think it was them who asked my mother to take me home. I was a bit of a ruffian. Fights, and I love fights and everything. I was a bit of a ruffian, I think.
Have you had any after effects of serving in the Navy?
No, just wish I was younger to get back in. When I see these ships there, I say, I wish I was on there. Don't know, I just love the sea, I suppose. No, no regrets. I'm just glad I did give up my apprenticeship and join. And, you know, I'd never, if I look back and thought, well, you could have gone in and you didn't, it would annoy me. So I did what I wanted to do.
What was the attitude to the Germans in the war about people who were bombed and so on?
Well, they hated them, you know, even if you weren't bombed by them. Well, we had two free French sailors on board us, the Dunluce Castle, and they had to change their names because they still had relatives in France. I forget the names, but anyway, the French cruiser, I think it was the Montcalm, came in, and they said, oh, we'd like to go on there. So they got permission to go on the Montcalm, you know, all French sailors, a good chap. Anyway, he was there all day. He drunk so much wine, he died of a heart attack, one of them. We buried him at Scapa Flow. As a Catholic, I was part of the burial party. A shame, really, you know, wasn't it? To come out and get out of France and join the Navy. And I know, his wife and her friend came up and we treated them well, you know, the Navy did, his wife and her friend. I tell you, a funny thing. A strange thing, they wouldn't do it now. We were alongside in the launch, taking his coffin ashore, and they had to come down the gangway, and they had skirts on, and the wind was blowing, and it was blowing the lady's skirts up. And the PO, in charge of the boat, he said, "Party, eyes down." You'd never do that now. So rather than embarrass the women, you know, looking up. I always remember that. He said, "Burial party, eyes down." We looked down till the girls came down and got on the boat, you know. You wouldn't do that now. No.